This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We're starting the eighth of the Rambam's eighth chapters, and the eighth is the most important one, where he talks about the Yetzira HaEnoshis, the human creation, is the subject of his chapter. And he says, "Ir shashi yivaleid ha'odom mitchilas inyonoi b'teva bar ma'alo v'lo bar chisoron." It is not possible for a person to be born initially with a nature that is virtuous or the opposite, or full of vice. That cannot be. The person is born neutral. Just as you can't have a child born a surgeon or born a lawyer. And by that image, he's already indicating that virtue and vice is labor. It's something one, it's a skill one has to develop. It's something that one has to work on. It's no different to a profession. It's no different to a career. But what is possible is for a person to be born by nature, muchon, with some degree of readiness, of propensity towards malo or lechitzoran, to a particular virtue or a particular vice. So some people will find that they have the qualities that can more easily be transformed into a particular virtue, and other people a quality that can more easily be transformed into a particular vice. Meaning that a particular activity will come to him more easily than another. And there again, the image to a profession is a good one. So while nobody is born a lawyer or a surgeon, you might have a child that's born with certain qualities that makes it easier for him to become a surgeon or a mathematician or a basketball player than somebody else. So if a child is born with genes that are going to make him tall, that doesn't make him a good basketball player. He's going to have to learn the game, and he's going to have to practice in order to become that. But certainly he's going to find it more easy to do so than a child that's born short. So it is with everything that one wants to achieve. There are certain qualities you need in order to achieve that. To some it comes easier, to some it comes harder. And so the qualities needed for a particular virtue or a particular vice might be more easily found in one child than in another child. For example, in those days they used to believe, and I don't know whether it has any validity or not, it's certainly today that it's not recognized as valid, that when a person is made up from has a very dry constitution, and his marrow is very pure, we don't know what that really means. V'aleichus boi me'aton, he's got very little murkiness, he's got very little moisture. Yekal olov ligros, he's going to find it earlier to learn, the least current to remember. So some children are born with an easier learning ability than others, and that is so. So again, whether it's to do with moisture and that kind of thing, we don't know. Don't know whether the Rambam gets that from Betzin or he gets that from Kabbalah. But certainly the idea that there are children that have the qualities that make learning easier, and some children have qualities that make learning harder. That's a reality. And he will understand things better than a person who has a white kind of moisture in him. Rav halichus b'moach, whose marrow is very moist. Whatever that means. But if you take this person who has a propensity to learn and he doesn't learn, you let him run around wild, and if you don't stimulate these natural tendencies in him and these trends in him, he'll remain an idiot. The fact that he's born with a propensity to learn will not be of any value to him if that hasn't been utilized and developed and taken from potential into actuality. And if you take the thick person and you teach him, he'll learn and understand. It will be harder. So the only difference will be the level of difficulty they'll have in the activity. Both will need to learn. If neither of them learn, neither of them will have wisdom. if both of them learn, both of them will have wisdom. To the one it will come easier than the other. That's the only difference. And in this very same way, a person who's more heated than another one will be able to be courageous. That means he will have a propensity for courage. It doesn't mean he will be courageous. It means courage will come easier to him than to somebody else. Provided they teach him courage, then he'll be a hero. If they put him through a training that teaches him to be courageous and enables him to master that side of him, then he will be courageous. Im yelamdu agvu yegibu v'acha, and another one v'acha, mezik diba yosekar, a more cold person, v'muchon v'tzad hamurech v'hapachad, will be a person who is naturally more fearful. V'chash yelamdu v'yegibu yekablu mehiro. And if they teach him fear and softness and sensitivity, he will get it very quickly. And if they try and teach him to become a hero, they take the soft, sensitive person and they teach him to become a hero. Lo yoshiv gibur rak b'koshi gadol. He will only become a hero with difficulty. He can do it. Can be done. You can train a person. A person can learn. A person can learn almost anything, but it will be hard. Aval yoshiv b'koshi agilu b'lisofik. But he certainly will be able to do it if they train him, without a doubt. If anybody can be trained, it's just going to be tougher for him. And the reason I'm explaining to this to you is that you should not consider the lies of the astrologers as true. That's why I'm telling you. Don't consider the lies of the astrologers as true. That doesn't mean that there's no such thing as astrology. But they believe that virtue or vice is determined by the stars, by where he's born. And that the stars compel certain activities, and that the stars compel certain outcomes. On the mani yodea, I know, she'adover amuskam aleinu mitoroseinu, what is clear in our Torah, umi philosophy yodan, and from the philosophers of Greek, kemoshim tu ta'anoiso emes, as they've argued with logic, so it's both from the Torah as it's been handed down, and by logical reasoning, philosophy. The actions of a person are entirely in his own hands. Nobody compels him, nobody inhibits him, nobody brings him to do it. Zulas atzmoy, klal, nobody other than himself at all. There is no force and nobody that makes anything happen to anybody. Nothing shiateu letzad milo, nothing that pushes him to a virtue or letzad chisoyin or to a vice. Elohim kein tiyelo hachonos hamazogin levad. All you can say is that he has a propensity. But to become that or not to become that is his own choice. There's no other force that compels him. Sheyekal lo inyan o yechav ichbad. The issue will be harder for him or easier. But it will be inevitable or impossible. That's not possible. That cannot be. It's always possible. And if in any way a person was compelled to act, then the mitzvahs of the Torah and its laws would be annulled. And the whole Torah would be a lie. If you cannot be held responsible for what you choose, you cannot do because there are other forces that are compelling you, then the whole Torah is a mockery. And therefore there's no question, both from the Torah and from the philosophers of his time, that we must accept, contrary to the astrologers and others, that we have complete mastery over what we wish to choose to do. Where this is really interesting is, if we take this principle, then it compels us to look at, for example, the issue of homosexuality rather interestingly. Because is homosexuality a law of the Torah? It is. It's an issue. It is. Therefore, using the Rambam's philosophy, what must we say? A person might have a propensity towards it, but it is not compelled. If he were compelled, if that's how he had to be, or she had to be, then it wouldn't be an Issur in the Torah. You cannot have an Issur in the Torah over which you have no free choice. So just as we cannot argue that crimes are committed because people are that way, and clearly there's a very small population, the percentage of the population that has a clinical problem that causes them to do funny things, and with medication that can sometimes be cured and sometimes not, sometimes managed and sometimes not, but that's a pretty small percentage of the population. The general population doesn't have that, and therefore we've got to be able to say that a person, if it's a mitzvah, then a person has to be held responsible for what he is. So is there a mitzvah to be a man or a mitzvah to be a woman? No, there isn't. It isn't. Why not? Because you cannot choose that. That's how you're born. Is there a mitzvah not to be homosexual? Yes, there is. Therefore, you weren't born that way. If you were born that way, there couldn't be a mitzvah. It's as simple as that. And it's very difficult in a world where things become politically correct and become the norm, and everything you see is like that, and everything that is written about it is like that, and you can't voice an opinion like that in public because you'll be shot down. It's amazing how very quickly your actual thinking starts changing. A major issue, and I don't remember how it was resolved in the Museum of Tolerance, as to whether they should have a section of tolerance towards gays. Now, in terms of the funding they get, they would probably have to close down if they said no, because in terms of the federal funding that they get, that would be making a statement as tolerance towards Jews and tolerance towards blacks and tolerance towards about gays. And yet, as a Jewish organization, they would be undermining the Rambam's, what the Rambam is saying is, if you do that, you're making a mockery of the Torah. If you're saying there's a law in the Torah that is not up to choice, and what does tolerance mean? You must be tolerant of what people can't choose. That's what, so you don't have to be tolerant of the things that people can choose. There's no requirement of that. You don't have to be tolerant of murderers and thieves. Why not? Because they shouldn't be doing that. If you hold that homosexuality is a mitzvah of the Torah, and if you hold on the Rambam's principles, that if mitzvahs of the Torah are compelled and you have to be tolerant for people who don't do them, then you're undermining the very essence of the Torah. So the Museum of Tolerance is put in a very interesting position, and as I say, I don't know how it was resolved, but I can't imagine that they're going to get out of it, because they would literally have to close down, and their choice now is, and it would be a very interesting thing, is what do you think the Gedolim would say if the Gedolim were asked, if a Chazon Ish or a Moshe Feinstein were asked? Museum of Tolerance, they would say close down. If your message is forced to include something which is contrary to the Torah, it cannot be a Jewish organization. Or else distance it from being Jewish, then take out the Holocaust as well, take out the whole Jewish element of it, and make it a tolerance thing, an American tolerance thing that has nothing to do with anything Jewish. But you cannot have an organization standing for something Jewish and preaching tolerance as a Jewish concept, which it is, and preaching it in a way which is not a Jewish concept. Now, that doesn't mean that one doesn't have to be understanding of people who do something wrong and intolerant of the person. There was a very important interaction in the Torah that took place between... this is actually quite interesting, because I decided to give a shiur in Johannesburg on this when it started becoming a problem. It got around that I was going to be giving a shiur on this subject. It was the time that film Philadelphia was out. Remember? It was a big issue at that time, and I was going to give a shiur, the shiur was filled with gays who came to hear. They were there, they wanted to know, Jewish and non-Jewish. And it was packed. And so the question was, am I going to change what I want to say? So of course not, you're not going to change what you're going to say. And the point was, at the time where Rabbi Meir was having an enormous amount of trouble from his balabatim, his committee, his chairman, his president, were giving him a terrible, terrible time. He was suffering enormously. And his wife, Berea, said, what are you going to do about this? He says, well, I'm praying, I'm davening. He said, what are you davening? He says, that they die. Get rid of them. Don't need them around here. These are destructive people. And she got very angry, and she said, it says Yitomu Chatoim in Haaretz, Lo Yitomu Chotim. It says you should pray that sin is removed from the world, not that sinners are removed. And your focus should be on the sin, not on the sinner. And that's Jewish tolerance. Jewish tolerance is, I'm tolerant for the person, I'm not tolerant for what he's chosen to do. I'm tolerant of murderers, I'm tolerant of thieves in the kind of, at the person, the human being. And unless it's somebody who's really evil and wicked and so on, but the person was angry and mad and he killed somebody, it's a terrible thing. And you can't be tolerant of the action, and the action has to be punished, and the person has to be locked away, and all the, everything that goes with that. But you can still have a sympathy and an understanding for the individual. And so, and I'm not putting it in the same category, but I'm not taking it totally out of the same category from a Torah point of view. The Torah criminalizes homosexuality, it does. We can try and dress it up as any way we want to, but it criminalizes homosexuality. Not as a man sin. Homosexuality is a man-God sin. It's not a man, an interpersonal sin. It's a man-God sin. So when I say criminalize, not in the sense of an interpersonal law, but in the sense of a law that is forbidden by the Torah. And as such, there can be no tolerance for the sin. But that doesn't mean that there's no tolerance for the people. Particularly in a society in which it's become so normal. We have to be even more careful not to put ourselves onto a pedestal and say we don't tolerate all these kind of things, because you don't tolerate homosexuality, that's true, but no more so do you not tolerate that than lashon hara, or causing machlokes, or gossiping. These are all, they're all sins. So it's not as a, and yes, the homosexuality is described as a sin that God finds particularly disgusting, but there are other descriptions of all sorts of other things that we all do from time to time that God also doesn't like a whole lot. So when we talk about, we have to be very careful with the intolerance. I'm not suggesting that one becomes focused on that and intolerant. And one has to bear in mind that the young people are now being raised in a time where there's something causing it. And we should find out what it is. Because there's something causing it. Whether it's societal or it's, I don't know what it is. But for people to say it's just that now it's public, it always used to be there, now it's public, that's not so. People who are more aware of it possibly than I am are able to tell when a person is homosexual 80% of the time, even if the person himself doesn't know it. I know people who can tell somebody they're homosexual even if the person himself hasn't yet recognized it, and those people have been watching it, they've seen even before it was fashionable. There's no question that the numbers have mushroomed in very recent years. There's no question in certain parts of the world that where it's more acceptable there is a greater incidence of it, and it's not just because the others are in closets, and I'm sure there are some that are in closets and would come out if it was more acceptable, but there is something else happening too, and that is the acceptability of it is enabling it to happen more, and there's something causing it, whether it's a problem with men, the men-women relationships, whether it's a problem in the way men are raised and educated, whether the boys don't go to the army anymore. I don't know what it is. But we'd better find out what it is, because we're not going to resolve it, and we can't just stand there and say, oh, we don't like it. So all I'm saying is that we shouldn't be sucked into the tolerance theme to the point where we buy into the fact that it's compulsive, there's nothing you can do about it. It's not. It's choice. There are some people who have a tendency for whom that choice comes much more naturally than some people it would be a ridiculous thing, it would be a horrible thing for them to think of. They could choose to do it, but it wouldn't enter their mind. And there are other people for whom it's very natural, and they would actually have to choose not to be homosexual. And one would have to understand that. But in this being pulled into this place of absolute tolerance means we're taking it out of the Torah. Means we're actually saying this sentence in the Torah isn't true. That's what we would be saying. We can't do that. We've got to work with it, understand it, be understanding of the person and the disease, because it is a disease today, in a sense, a plague. Try and find the societal reasons for it. Start trying to address that. But if we say this is okay and normal, nobody's going to address it. In the current society out there, you try saying we'd better address homosexuality and figure out why it's happening and solve it, and you'll be shut down immediately. It's like saying we've got to address why 50% of the population are men or women. We've got to stop this. We don't want such a thing happening. That's in their mind, but it's equal. It's the same. They're men, women, and homosexuals. And being intolerant of one is the same as being intolerant of the other. It's a complete madness that the world is seen that way. So the Rambam's comment here goes far beyond just the general thing of understanding people being born with virtues or vices. It actually clarifies the importance of understanding that anything the Torah says is a law, we have choice about. If we don't have choice, it isn't a law. I'll just make one more point and then I'll take discussion, and that is the Rambam uses the same concept, and I think he gets to it a little bit further here, with marriage. Is marriage a law? A mitzvah, isn't it? Is it a mitzvah for a man to get... Let's say for a man, it's not only for a man, but let's say for a man, is it a mitzvah for a man to get married?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what do we say? Do we not say a bracha under the chuppah? How rare are them? That's one. We say Gofen twice, but there are another eight that we say under the chuppah. So sure, it's a great mitzvah to get married. Can there be an avera in marriage? Can there be a conscript? Yes, if they're married, they will see married person who has never get. Of course they can be very serious averas. Can you therefore say that your wife is bashir?
Yes.
Well, then you disagree with the Rambam today, Mrs. Khan. Why can you not say it's bashir? Same argument. If it's a mitzvah and an avera, then there must be a choice. You cannot say I was compelled to do a mitzvah, just as you cannot say I was compelled to do an avera. So if marrying a particular woman was a mitzvah, it couldn't have been bashir. Bashir meaning compelled. Bashir could mean that there's a right person out there, which you might or might not marry, you might or might not find. But to assume that we had to get married, it was in the stars. We had to. No, that's not Jewish. That is not a Jewish concept. We chose to. And we hope we chose right, but maybe we didn't. And a kohen who marries a gerusha cannot say, I married a divorcee, but that was in the stars. We fell in love, so it must have been in the stars, but that's the way it was. No. A Jew marries a Gentile. It doesn't have to have been in the stars. It might have been, might not have been. A kohen marrying a gerusha might have been in the stars. Maybe it wasn't in the stars that she got married to the first one. That was a mistake. That could also happen.
Well, it sounds almost like you're saying it wasn't the bashir, but you got mixed up with it.
Yeah, bashir simply means, and we'll deal with it in the Rambam story, bashir simply means that there's somebody set aside. There's somebody out there set aside for everyone. But the bashir does not mean you find that someone. Whether you find that someone
is bashir, but you may not marry them.
Sure, you choose who you want to marry. You can choose your bashir, or you can choose somebody else. Sometimes you know that you're not choosing your bashir, and sometimes you don't. When do you know that you're not choosing your bashir?
When it doesn't work out?
No, it doesn't make that. It could mean it was your bashir and you made a mess. What is the when does the it's all very comforting to think, you know, if I marry somebody it's a bashir, if it doesn't work out then it wasn't a bashir, blame it all on God and that's good. But it just isn't so, and it cannot be so according to Rambam's law. It cannot be so. So when do you know that you're not marrying your bashir? If it's somebody you shouldn't be marrying, and then if somebody couldn't tell if it, then it can't be your bashir. That you know for sure. So it said a mamzer, we always say, isn't it sad that a mamzer can only marry another mamzer or a convert or whatever? In a sense, by narrowing his choice, he's safer, isn't it? He knows who isn't his bashir. Almost every Jewish girl is not his bashir. He knows that. So it's a little bit easier for him to find his bashir. But for the average person, there's a very wide choice. And who knows whether they marry the bashir or not? You don't know. You don't know. It depends. There has to be a lot of siyata d'shmaya to marry the right one. A lot of siyata d'shmaya to not mess it up in the process. It's not a simple thing. And it's our responsibility. We can't blame it on God. Mary and then Michelle.
Back to the point about homosexuality, Rabbi, and I don't know if this is an appropriate question for now, but what do you do when it's clear that in the Jewish day school system there are gay teachers? I mean, really clear. How does that affect what you just said? What does that do to the Torah? What does that do to the children that see these teachers? I know we live in the American. In American society, and that complicates the issue, but does that make it right?
No. No, it doesn't.
But what do you do if you suspect a teacher might be...
You teach your children about it. What do you do about a teacher in a Jewish day school who's Mechalel Shabbos? What do you teach about a science teacher who doesn't keep Shabbos? Why is it any different? So either you're going to say all teachers in Jewish day schools must be frum, must be role models, or non-Jewish, or you say you teach the children. But this person is not doing something right, just as you sometimes don't do something right. Learn from the good, don't make any role model, including parents themselves, as somebody perfect who must be emulated in every way. That's the first thing you teach them. Everybody does something's right and something's wrong. And the thing is, the only thing to emulate is the striving to do things right. And to be able to judge and pick out what there is about this person I admire and what there is about this person I don't admire. And then from there you move on to the basketball players that they admire. And you say the only thing that you can really admire about this person is his physical self-discipline and his physical stature. There's nothing else to admire about him. And so if you take a well-trained dog and you want to admire that, then have them up. You have your basketball players and have some well-trained dogs next to them. If that's what you want to admire, because that's all there is to admire. You're admiring something animal about these people. You know, there's nothing human you're admiring about them. If you want to admire human qualities, then put great human beings up on your own. You teach your child that. That doesn't mean they're going to take the basketball players down, throw away their cards. But that's what you teach. Just as this gay teacher is doing something that isn't right. And this is what it means, and this is where it says in the Torah that it isn't right. And today people believe that it is right. Explain this part of the Ramah. It's an incredible learning opportunity instead of just pretending it doesn't exist. So my answer probably is it right to have them in? No, it isn't. But then don't have anybody that breaks the Torah teaching the children. If you're going to have people that break the Torah, use it as a learning opportunity.
But isn't it a sort of a different kind of an influence though as well? I mean, the fact that the school it's an uncomfortable feeling that there are just some teachers that are, you know, that are in the schools. I mean, and I understand it in the public school system, but in our school system, it's harder for me to understand.
But why is it different having a Halal Shabbos? Why is it not?
I don't know that I've actually come across that.
They went somewhere on Shabbos. They did something on. They saw a sports game on Shabbos. I think they get to know about it pretty quickly. So I don't think it's very different to that. It's different because we don't talk about it. That's why that's the only difference. And so it's more insidious because we don't talk about it. But if we talk about it, the same thing. And in fact, there's probably more sympathy for a gay person today than for a Mechal Shabbos. If we really want to get to that, there's no reason not to keep Shabbos today. There's no reason except you don't want to, or you weren't raised that way. But there is with whatever is causing homosexuality, and I'm convinced of it that there are certain factors. I'm sure it's not one that is causing, and the tolerance of it is only one. I think there are probably a whole lot of other things in there. I don't know where in the education system, in the family system, I don't know where it is, but I'm sure that there are a whole lot of things in our society that are causing it. And causing it, not meaning that compels that behavior, but that it's making it a more natural choice for more and more young people. And that is a problem. And the acceptance of it and the normality of it, those are problems. Just as the acceptance and the normality of other things that aren't okay. Intermarriage is becoming accepted. Should a Jewish school hire somebody who's intermarried? In our own shul we had problems when I said that a person is intermarried, and I'm talking about conversion, can't have aliyahs. It's so accepted in an Orthodox shul. There were people who were very upset with that decision. And that's how accepted and how intolerant it seemed to say. And I didn't say you can't be friends with him. Be friends with gay people if you want. Be friends with Mechalel Shabbos. Be friends with people in Mariah. We're living in a world where you can't isolate yourself, because some of the nicest people are those people. And not everybody who's keeping the Torah is so great. So be friends with whoever you're lucky enough to click with and to have a good friendship with, but see it for what it is and understand that there's certain restrictions. Now, what would happen if a gay person came to shul, an openly gay person, a declared gay person? Could he have an aliyah?
How can you let people in the Mechalel Shabbos have aliyah?
Yeah, I'm not happy about that, about them having aliyahs on Shabbos, at least for the first seven aliyahs, but we haven't addressed that properly yet. We haven't addressed that properly yet. It's an interesting question. I don't know how many shuls have dealt with it. Is it that different than from a Mechal Shabbos? Is it that different from anybody who's doing anything else wrong? If it's open and it's on, and I think that's part of the difficulty. When it's open in a society that allows it to be open, is it like intermarriage? Is it like somebody saying, I just don't accept this part of the Torah? Well, that would then be the next thing, wouldn't it be, that there would be discrimination? Yeah, these are things that we're going to have to. The women issue and lahavdil, I'm not putting them in the same category at all. Women issues and gay issues are things that the modern Orthodox world is going to have to confront in a very serious way in the next few years.
What happened that time you spoke to that big show full of gay people? How did they respond?
It wasn't that big show. It was my show. It was just, just full of gay people. That particular
evening.
So
how did they respond?
But wonderfully, wonderfully well.
Really?
Yeah, there were letters into the paper.
What did they say?
They could buy it 100%.
That it wasn't.
But the actions are abominable. The actions are abominable. But there's tolerance for the person. and their claim was nobody chooses it. It's a lonely, horrible existence. It's not something they want or choose, in that sense. And anybody who's been there would know how lonely it is. So it's not as if they just say, "Oh, fine," and that they would all rather be normal is what they were saying. They would all prefer to be normal.
So they're saying it wasn't their choice.
Well, they're saying it wasn't their choice. And I'm saying I understand that they're precious. The first thing the Rambam starts with, that they are tendencies. And secondly, take those tendencies in a society where it's accepted and throw in, add a little bit more, where there's something going on in the society which in fact is weakening the male side of them or whatever it is that's causing it. Throw all that together, and it might not be compulsion, but it makes it quite hard. And yes, there's still the choice. But it becomes hard. It's one of the issues. That's why that's one of the things that Orthodoxy has to address. It's a very serious problem, and it's affecting Orthodox people as much as anybody else. And you've got it in yeshivas today as well. It's a massive, massive problem. Yeah.
It seems that as compared to South African people who came to hear you speak, in America it seems to have been incredibly politicized.
Yes.
To the point where homosexuality is being proselytized in public school, Gay Awareness Month, Gay Awareness Week, just by watching the conventions, the Democratic convention, just Michael Mendez was interviewing a gay activist. She thought half her delegation should be homosexual because that reflected the general population. And that's, I think, a problem in that gay activists don't just want to be tolerated. They want to be accepted as 50% of the population.
Yeah, but they're right.
But they're not 50%.
Whatever the percentage is, and there might be a majority soon. Once you go into the fact that it's a compelled form of behavior, then you go into the fact that it's a category of people, and a discriminated category of people. If you take it as compelled behavior, then they're right all the way. The only thing that we disagree with them on is whether it's compelled or choice. And that's why when you say it's become politicized, I blame the conservatives of politicizing as much as the liberals. They're doing it betnimus. They're not going out saying we want to destroy the world and bring this evil influence into the world. That's not what they're saying. They're saying if you accept that it's compulsion, then any good Christian or Jew would understand what it's like to be a member of a discriminated group of people.
But they don't seem to accept it when you say the behavior is abhorrent, but the individual...
You cannot say the behavior is abhorrent to somebody who believes it's compulsion. That's like saying blacks are abhorrent. It's a terrible thing to say. There's only one discussion to have with the gay community. Is it compelled or is it choice?
Then if they say it's compelled...
That's the only discussion. There's nothing else. Everything else is a natural outcome. And that's why I say I blame the conservatives, my brother and Michael, everybody included, to jump on and attack them without addressing the one and only legitimate debate. There's only one discussion, because if it's choice, now we can get on as to whether it's a good choice or bad choice.
But
at least once it's choice, you're not in a separate group of people, and then hate crime legislation doesn't apply to you, and then because this is something you've got choosing to do. The only discussion is it a choice or is it compulsion? There's no other moral discussion.
But then if they say it's compulsion, you were born that way, and you're saying no, it's not, there's no discussion. They're not going to hear. You can't quote them a Torah source that says it's a choice. They won't listen to it.
That's not true.
You think they do?
That's not true. If you get up onto a podium at a gay rally and you say,
oh, no,
you're going to get shot down. But if you see the smaller groups, there are those who will never hear it. And there are those who will not want to hear it, but something drops in. There are some who will enter into debate. I've had many, many debates here and overseas with them. And they're concerned about the discussion. It's not so clear. And nor is it to me that today this still applies, in the sense that if we lived in a society where theft was the norm, where it was impossible to earn a living without theft, where taxation was 99%, and people were stealing from one another and the government, I wouldn't say it legitimizes it, but I would say, well, I don't know what I would do in such a situation. So we've got to be quite careful before we look at it. We've got to look at our society and say there's something happening. This is more than just a whole lot of people wanting to be naughty. Because there are more fun ways to be naughty than that. So there's something going on that we also have to take responsibility for. We can't just say there's a gay problem out there. There's a society problem over here that is producing gays. Our tolerance for gays is only one of the factors. There are other factors too. There are parental factors, there are school factors, there are societal factors, there are man-woman relationship factors, there are religious education factors. There are all sorts of things that play into it, and we've got to take responsibility for that. That's not a gay problem, that's our problem, because that could strike one of our children, God forbid. Whatever that problem outside there is, could very easily strike any of our children, and does. And so we can't get onto our high horse and just say, look, it's a matter of... on the other hand, that's where that, this is our compass. Our compass has to point to the view, we've got to get society back to a position where homosexuality is an issue of choice. That means society must see it that way, and we've got to get rid of the elements in society that are making it less and less of a matter of choice for some people. So it's a complex, complex debate, and by moving, by taking a stance all the way to the right, we are doing as much damage as those who take a stance all the way to the left. It's exactly the same as becoming entirely intolerant of people who keep shabbos. Remember, last week we spoke about the importance of having a zealot. Remember, we had and a zealot doesn't mean somebody who disengages. While disengagement, that was the discussion we had with Esther, while disengagement is sometimes admirable, that's not zealousness. Zealousness is where you go and you hold placards and you fight and you shout. And we said that you need the zealot, but that's not where the truth lies. The truth is somewhere in between. So you need people who are zealous about not keeping shabbos. But that's not where the truth is. The truth is what's causing it, and our education system, and why do so many people not know about shabbos. And the bringing back of people to Yiddishkeit was not by the zealots. Was by people who could communicate. And so you need people like my brother and Michael and others like them shouting on them, but they're zealots. You can't, you mustn't be, you can become confused to think that that's the truth. There is a purism of truth in that, and you need the zealots yelling on the extremes, but that's not where the problem will be solved. The problem will be solved by people who are sympathetic and understanding, but won't give up on the principle. The principle is, it's a mitzvah, therefore it's choice. The reality might be that it's becoming less and less of choice. Let's fix reality, is what we were going to have to do. Of course it's hard, but it's much easier to say, it's a gay problem out there. You know, kill the gays, kill the Mechalel Shabbos, kill the people who talk Lashon Hara, and I'll be the only one left in the world. That's much easier. That's a zealot. That's a zealot.
When I was in gerontology school, there were two things that hit. One is, in one of my textbooks, it said, there's many more older women than older men. And the recommendation was that older women get together. And the second thing was, as a social worker, we had to take licensing courses. And I dropped my license after the last course I took. I said I was never going to take these courses again. They required a course about homosexuality with full motion pictures and screens in front of us about everything.
Yeah, that's part
they
of
required
the...
required it.
And again, if you assume that this is a compelled behavior, then it's just the same as showing a movie about disabled people. You need to see it. You need to understand the struggle. You need to see what it's like. You need to, otherwise you won't be able to. If you, there's only one discussion. Is it choice or is it compulsion? There's nothing else to talk about. If it's compulsion, all of that is valid. All of it. And if it's not compulsion, none of it is valid. And whether it's compulsion or not is that grey area of today, where you're talking about a society in which it is still not compelled. I would say that the law of the Torah is never compelled. You're not compelled to steal even if you're hungry. You're not compelled to steal. There are people who have not done it. You're not compelled to break Shabbos even if you're struggling. There are lots of people who manage to see through the struggle without breaking Shabbos. But it's very tough. And I think that's where homosexuality is. Not compelled, still a mitzvah of the Torah. It's not compulsion. But wow, for certain people in certain societies growing up in certain ways who have a propensity towards it, it must be terribly tough, and we'd better help them.
Is that why, just thinking about a person's nature and how they grow, is that why Hashem gave Abraham 10 trials and to show us that you form somebody into what they need to be?
Yes, correct. Very good, absolutely. Those are choices. And if you look at him, maybe we'll even talk about it over Rosh Hashanah with Abraham having to sacrifice his son. It's instinctive not to do that. So you could almost argue that it was an unfair test, that one is compelled not to do it. What father would do it? And that was the test, to get Abraham to the point where he knows nothing is compelled. Everything is by choice. You can choose to sacrifice your son. And therefore when you don't sacrifice your son, it's not instinct. When you don't sacrifice your son, that's also choice. Nothing we do is instinct. we feel instincts, we have instincts, but whether to act on those instincts or not, it's part of the work that we're doing with the Department of Justice on hate crime, is one of the things that I'm talking to them about, is the difference between crimes that are motivated by values and crimes that are motivated by instincts. And that even a crime that is motivated by instinct does not mean that there's no choice. For an animal, if it is motivated by instinct, when a dog is mad, it bites. There's no choice. If you tease a dog to a certain point, it will bite, unless it has been trained. When a human being is mad, he doesn't have to lose his temper. He can. The instinct is, I feel mad. The discipline, the training is that I won't act on it. The instinct is, I feel homosexual. The act is, the reality is, I won't act on it. That choice the human being has.
We all feel more upset about a homosexual teaching our son than a Mahalo Shabbos. Is that a sign that we're just would an Abraham Avinu, for example, have the same revulsion against either one?
It was the homosexual in Abraham's day.
Yeah.
Where?
Saddam,
where did that all start, right? Saddam. What did God say to what did God say to what did Abraham say to God about Saddam?
I could find 10 righteous men.
Yeah. Save it, God. Save it. Save them. Save them. Didn't sound like a zealot, did he? Save them, Hashem. I'll teach them. We'll try. Don't kill them. Don't wipe them out. David, look what they were. Much worse than just homosexuals, and that was not in a society where it was acceptable. So this intolerance of homosexuality, this passionate intolerance of it, while there is a tolerance of Chilul Shabbos, for example, is not Jewish. You want to be a zealot about everything. You want to be a zealot, that's fine. I have incredible zealot, incredible respect for zealots, as we said last week. You need them. I don't want to be one, and I wouldn't appoint one to a position of leadership, but we need them. But a zealot means you're zealot about the Torah, not zealot about one thing in the Torah, and tolerant about everything else. You might be more zealous about one thing than other things. That's something that you think is really being forgotten and is really important to recover. But you can't be completely tolerant about everything else. So some of your best friends don't keep kosher, and some of your best friends don't keep Shabbos. Some of your best friends aren't all that honest in business, but the gays you are to get. That's not Jewish. Like, you want to be tolerant of everybody. Understand, that would be a different
issue.
That would be a different issue.
But the words about Shabbos are also molesting their brain.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
see, if I begin to say I want my children only to be taught by people whose value system I identify with, or you're going to say my children had better learn early on that they're not that many people whose value system they will 100% identify with, and they need to learn to sift. And that's one of the most important processes, because the alternative is that you educate them in a Mahasholim environment where they don't have to do that, and there's a certain pleasure in that and a certain beauty in not having to do that, and an enormous danger in not having to do that. Do they ever learn how to do that? So then for the kid who grows up there are two sets of people. The people are okay and the people are wicked. And that then in today's society, that's dangerous.
So I'm not so sure boys pick it up. Oh, he's still gay. So it's
kind of
older boys, I think. I'm not sure. I don't know if the older boys pick it up. I don't know if they will pick it up.
Well, someone had a teacher raised
to
have
it. Although
it's
important. There are important
discussions to have with kids today. You know, I said some. He said they would. It's just in class in front of everybody. We always make a change on their head.
There were certain elements in our society which could cause this large percentage of people being homosexual. And do you think it might be, you know, we have so many single girls that have no chance of getting married. It seems like they do. They want to get married, but they have no chance. And so they have no choice. I mean, what can they do? Are they going to just be alone all their lives?
It's very difficult. They still have choice. Obviously, everybody has choice. But these are some of the difficulties. You're right. And the reason for there being so many singles, not just so many single women, it's many single men. The reason for that is something. Why there is a reluctance to commit to a relationship What is the reason for that? Is there an upbringing thing? Is there a societal thing? And what's going on at the moment now with the revelations about Hollywood's aiming, targeting violence in other movies at 10-year-olds? This is something incredibly serious. I don't know if people are people reacting the way one would expect them to react.
The other night, Richard and I went to a meeting of
advisory board.
Yeah, Steve Allen is the head of it.
But this is much more serious because here you've got the movie industry that puts an R rating as all of the highest rating. I think R is separate, doesn't matter. The really violent stuff, what is the what, what is that? And they focus groups to test market reaction and to make sure that
the adult thinks it's okay. A lot of young kids are brought to the R-rated movies.
For years we've been complaining about you take your kid to see a G or a PG film and you have to time it after the trailers because the promotions for the movies are for almost everything that's playing, which is R and, I mean, movies they
but
shouldn't
even,
see.
Apart from the reality, but just the insidiousness of it, the thought that it's actually planned. It's not as if, get worried about the gays, get worried about Hollywood. This is there you're talking about insidious planning. And yes, the objections that Gore and Lieberman are getting about you're objecting that you're taking money from them, real problem, real moral problem. And that's the problem when you start taking the moral high ground. You want to come out against gays, that has all sorts of implications. You want to come out against Hollywood, that has all sorts of other implications. You can't take money from them and hammer them. That's immoral. You want to take money from them, you say thank you very much. You want to hammer them, you don't take money from them.
So for Gore and Lieberman take money and then hammer
them? Apparently, so they're saying. No, she's out for the moment.
But Lieberman used to hand out the Silver Sewer Awards, where every year he and William Bennett condemned the worst, the people in Hollywood, the companies in Hollywood that put out the worst kind of entertainment.
Good.
And Lieberman in the last couple months has totally backtracked on that completely in public. He's rejected it. I mean, he's like stepping back on
almost
a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, it's almost inevitable when you're in that position. That's one of the...
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't reject...
It's like the Museum of Tolerance. Once you're taking public money, you've got to include gays in your tolerance exhibit. So your choice is not to take public money.
But there's a context for that at the Museum of Holocaust.
You don't understand why?
If I'm running a museum on diversity, I can choose to display exhibits about gays or Jews or whatever. You can't force me.
No, but we can stop giving you money.
The government gives them...
We can stop giving you money. That's all that can happen. It's not a crime.
But how can the government stop giving you money because you're not...
Because you're discriminating, you're showing tolerance against all other groups but gays, which means you have a problem with the gays. And
no, but I can, you know, there are Armenians and there are groups in China that are discriminating. I mean, if you get to the point where you're saying that you have to do all of these groups, then you really do none of them. I mean, if this becomes...
But it's not just gays. There are a whole lot of other groups they've been targeted for, and they're having to open up with just about wherever there's a case of blatant racism, not just in the United States but even overseas, there's enormous pressure on them to do something about it. But here, and this is where the politicization comes in, so the gays groups have enormous clout and backing in large numbers of people, and even Yeshiva University, who gets government funding, had to, and Norman Lamb was hammered in the Jewish world for that, had to open a gay society.
Gay society?
Yes, at Yeshiva University. A gay club.
If it's requested.
The money from
Otherwise, you're going to lose government funding.
Rabbi,
I don't know if there's a legal thing about it, but apparently they're free to say that that we have policies that we fund, that we don't fund organizations that discriminate against any protected group, and gays are a protected group in terms of the law.
That's a different issue.
But isn't there a context at the Museum of Holocaust to present gays? Gays were a target of Nazism.
The Museum of Tolerance is having less and less to do with the Holocaust, which is not such a bad... It's more to do with the lessons from the Holocaust. And that's very clever. I'm very comfortable with that. And so it becomes more current and it becomes more relevant to people. That's fine, 100%. And if it wasn't Nazism, if the question was tolerance of people who do different things, even that you don't approve of, and how to be tolerant of the person but not the action, then include gays. That's fine. but once you put Nazis and you put Jew, black, gay as potential victims of intolerance, then you're saying that being gay is
born.
Then you're undermining the terror.
So do they have something there for the Christians who are being persecuted in Sudan?
I haven't been through it for a while, but there's been a lot of pressure.
If it's not focused on the Jewish issues, why are Jewish people supporting it?
Because it's doing a lot of good work. It's learning from the Jewish people, learning from Holocaust. It's a very clever concept. Very wonderful work. Yeah. Very wonderful.
Take the 12th grade boys that you
let
through it.
Yeah, very wonderful.
Thank you, Rabbi. Because you allowed employment law, homosexuality is not in all states, but certainly in California, is a protected category. So, for example, if there's discrimination on the job based on the fact that you're homosexuality, I'll get cases at least. Either to defend or to pursue those cases. Is that a Jewish question as to whether an observant Jew should take on a case on behalf of someone who's saying that I'm being discriminated against in the workplace because I'm gay? I mean, is it, because I don't know, when you say we understand the and we're sensitive to the person, the sinner, as it were, even while we don't tolerate the sin, so I'm not sure where you draw the line here. I mean,
I think that it's okay in your case because you're working with the legal system. If you were lobbying for legislation, or you were a legislator voting as an Orthodox Jewess, I would say that would be a problem. But you're working within a legal system. This person has certain rights within the system, and you're protecting those rights. Whether you agree that he should have exactly those rights or not is not the issue.
What about
the lawyers take on cases where they suspect or even know that the defendant is guilty?
Oh, absolutely.
Because the defendant has a right to be defended.
What about
the right to be defended?